You're sitting at a restaurant the night before a morning flight. Your buddy orders a round, you check your watch, do the math, and think, 8 hours, I'm good. And that math might be the most dangerous shortcut in all of general aviation. I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar. Today we're cracking open a regulation that every student pilot memorizes, but almost nobody actually understands. Federal Aviation Regulation 91.17, the rule about alcohol, drugs, and whether you're truly fit to fly. Shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot, instrument, commercial? They've got you covered. Great way to mark the milestones that matter. aviationsoul.com. All right, let's walk through this together. Because I promise you, what's in this regulation is not what most people think. Here's the text of 91.17, and I'm going to break it into four parts because each one matters on its own. Part 1. No person may act as a crew member of a civil aircraft within 8 hours after the consumption of any alcoholic beverage. That's your 8 hours bottle to throttle. It's the one everyone knows. But here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. 8 hours is the legal minimum. It is not a recommendation for safe practice. It's a floor, not a ceiling. Your body does not process alcohol on a perfect schedule. A heavy night of drinking can leave you impaired well past those 8 hours, even if you technically stopped in time. The FAA's own medical guidance says 24 hours from the last drink is a much safer buffer for anything beyond a single glass of wine with dinner. 8 hours keeps you legal. It might not keep you safe. And in the airplane, safe is what matters. Part 2. No person may act as a crew member while under the influence of alcohol. Notice there's no blood alcohol number attached to this part. This is separate from the 8-hour clock. This means if you had your last drink 9 hours ago but you still feel foggy, still feel off, you're in violation of the regulation. Under the influence means under the influence, period. You're the one who has to make that call, and that is where this regulation gets honest with you. It puts the responsibility squarely on your shoulders. Part 3. No person may act as a crew member while having 0.04% by weight or more alcohol in the blood. Now, here's where it gets interesting, 0.04. That is half the legal limit for driving a car in every state, half. The FAA set that bar lower for a reason, because at altitude, even mild impairment gets worse. Hypoxia multiplies the effects of alcohol. At 5,000 feet on a warm afternoon, a blood alcohol level that would barely register at a traffic stop can degrade your judgment, your reaction time, and your scan in ways you won't notice until it's too late. 0.04 is not generous, and honestly, if you're anywhere near it, you shouldn't be flying. Part 4. And this is the one that catches people off guard. No person may act as a crew member while using any drug that affects the person's faculties in any way contrary to safety. Read that again. Any drug that includes over-the-counter medications. That includes the antihistamine you took for allergies this morning. That includes the cold medicine you grabbed off the shelf at the pharmacy last night. If it makes you drowsy, if it slows your reaction time, if it affects your ability to think clearly, you are prohibited from flying under this regulation. There is no approved drug list in the regulation itself. The FAA maintains guidance through its Office of Aerospace Medicine, and your aviation medical examiner can help you sort out what's acceptable and what isn't. But the default position of the regulation is conservative. If a drug affects your faculties in any way contrary to safety, you're grounded. And this is where we need to talk about something that's harder to regulate, the stuff that isn't in a bottle at all. The IMSAFE checklist. You've probably seen it in your ground school material. Illness, medication, stress, alcohol, fatigue, emotion. It's not a regulation, it's not in Part 91. But it's the practical tool that fills in the gaps that 91.17 can't cover on its own. Think about fatigue. There is no FAR that says a private pilot can't fly after being awake for 20 hours. Airlines have duty time limits. Part 135 operators have rest requirements. But you, flying your Cessna 172 on a Saturday morning? The regulations are silent on how tired you are. That's on you. And fatigue degrades your performance in exactly the same ways alcohol does. Slower reaction times, narrowed attention, poor decision making, missed radio calls. The accident reports are full of perfectly legal flights made by exhausted pilots who had no business being in the airplane. Stress works the same way, a brutal week at work. A fight with your spouse, financial pressure that's kept you up at night. None of that shows up on a checklist you hand to anyone, but it absolutely shows up in the cockpit. Stress narrows your attention. It makes you rush. It makes you skip steps. And when the unexpected happens, a sudden crosswind gust, a radio call you weren't expecting, an alternator light you've never seen before, a stressed pilot has fewer mental resources to deal with it. Here's a scenario. You've been planning a cross-country for 2 weeks. Weather's been terrible. Finally, Saturday morning looks clear. But you were up until 2 in the morning because your kid was sick, you got maybe 3 hours of sleep, you took an over-the-counter decongestant at midnight because you felt a cold coming on, you had 2 beers at dinner around 7 the previous evening. Let's check the boxes. 8 hours since your last drink? Yes, easily. Blood alcohol below 0.04? Almost certainly under the influence of alcohol? Probably not, but are you fit to fly? You've had 3 hours of sleep, you took a sedating medication less than 8 hours ago, and you've got a head cold that might not let you clear your ears on descent. The regulation says you might be legal on the alcohol front, but the medication issue alone could ground you under Part 4 of 91.17, and the fatigue and illness together make this a flight you should not be making, even if no regulation specifically says you can't. This is what I mean when I say the rule goes beyond 8 hours. The examiner is looking for you to understand this regulation on a check ride and not just recite it. They want to know that you can apply it to real life. They might give you a scenario like the one I just described and ask, "Are you legal to fly? Are you safe to fly?" And they want you to know the difference between those two questions. Because legal and safe are not always the same thing. Let me give you another scenario that comes up in the real world more than you'd think. You're a newly minted private pilot. You fly to a destination airport for a friend's wedding. At the reception, you have a couple of drinks. No big deal. You're not flying until tomorrow afternoon, but the next morning you wake up and you don't feel great. Not hungover exactly, but not sharp either. You got to bed late. The hotel room was noisy. You're a little dehydrated. Your 8 hours are long past. You're almost certainly legal, but you need to be honest with yourself. Are you the pilot you were when you flew in yesterday? Because the airplane doesn't care about your wedding schedule, the weather doesn't care that you told your friend you'd be home by dinner, and the physics of flight don't grade on a curve because you're having an off day. One more thing about 91.17 that's worth knowing. If a law enforcement officer or the FAA requests it, you are required to submit to a test to indicate the percentage of alcohol in your blood. Refusing that test is treated the same as a violation. And a conviction for operating any vehicle, not just an aircraft, while under the influence of alcohol or drugs, can result in suspension or revocation of your pilot's certificate. The FAA cross-references state driving records. A DUI on the highway can follow you into the cockpit. You're also required to report certain alcohol and drug-related motor vehicle actions to the FAA within 60 days on your next medical application. The regulation for that is Part 61.15. And it ties directly into the medical certification process. The FAA takes this seriously, very seriously. So what's the practical takeaway here? It's simple, but it requires something harder than memorizing numbers. It requires honesty. Before every flight, ask yourself the real question. Not am I legal? Am I safe? Am I sharp? Am I the pilot this flight needs me to be because the regulation gives you a floor? It tells you the absolute minimum standard below which you must not fly, but the minimum standard is not the goal. The goal is being a pilot who makes good decisions. And good decisions start on the ground, the night before, at the pharmacy counter, at the dinner table, and in the mirror the morning of the flight. The IMSAFE checklist isn't in the FARs, but it should be tattooed on the inside of every pilot's flight bag. Illness, medication, stress, alcohol, fatigue, emotion. Run through it honestly before every flight. If any one of those gives you pause, the safest decision might be to put the keys back on the hook. This one draws from the FARs themselves, FAA Advisory Circular 91-A, and the Aeronautical Information Manual section on fitness for flight. Good stuff to read when you get a chance. More at radiohanger.com. Fly when you're ready. Not just when you're legal. See you next time.